We are now recording, and I have a very special guest, Canadian country music rising star Jamie Hamilton. She's here today to talk about her passion for music, country music, being a three-time cancer survivor, and also talk about her new single, Stomping Ground. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thanks so much for having me, Christine.
I am delighted to have you, and I would like to know, when did you, well, congratulations on your new single, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
And is it about your background, like in at your cabin? Is that correct?
Yeah, totally. So I actually wrote this tune back in 2017, and it's kind of one of those songs where I had in my back pocket, you know, I just kept it. I wanted to release it at a time that felt right. And this year just kind of felt like the year to do that. For as long as I can remember, my family and I, we've spent time up at our lake cabin. So we have a cabin just on Cowichan Lake, which is in BC. And I just have the best memories there growing up, so I wanted to write a song about that.
Well, the video looks so much fun with family, friends, and having fun on the water, and it's just like, I just love the name, Stomping Ground, you know, it's like I can think of it going back to your childhood, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah, I kind of wanted to bring that sense of nostalgia and as well as bring that visual to a music video, because it is quite a visual song that I'm, you know, describing a place. So when I shot the video, I actually shot it at our cabin. So it's totally legit, I guess.
Oh, it's wonderful. And what's the feedback been like so far?
It's been great. I have a lot of really lovely friends and family around me who, you know, they like to go up to spend their summers up at the lake too. So I feel like I have a lot of people that kind of like that lake time lifestyle, and people even just that like to listen and watch the video. So it's been awesome.
No, because you also have, and I listened to Save a Barstool for Me.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
And Parachute, but where did you get your inspiration to write? Like,
So it kind of comes from everywhere, really. You know, for a while, music really is that outlet for me. So for Save a Barstool for Me, at that time, my grandpa had passed, and he had passed from cancer. So when he was sick, and there was a lot of people coming to visit, and that was when a lot of my family and I, we were, you know, spending time with him, and there was a saying that a lot of people said, they would say, "Save a Barstool for me," you know, because he's a, you know, that kind of older generation, you know, likes his whiskey and all that. So I wanted to write a song that kind of was a tribute to him, and he just, you know, he was quite a cool man, and a lot of people looked up to him. So I really wanted to write a song about that, because I know a lot of people, you know, loss is a part of life, unfortunately. So I wrote that with my friends Rich Cloak and Josh David, and they were such great songwriters, and they totally, when we went into that virtual room, because we did a Zoom song, right, they totally just, they understood what I was trying to say, and yeah, they were amazing, and they really made the song what it is today.
Well, it takes a team, right? And it's wonderful. Like, you know, I was gonna ask you, why country music?
So I feel like when I was younger, I always gravitated towards it, because if we stem, you know, back to early days when I started playing guitar, I was 9 years old. And around that time, you can probably guess what artist was flourishing in country music. It was Taylor Swift. So I think at that time, it was really cool to just see an artist that not only was a huge country artist at the time, but also wrote all of her songs. And I think that was just so cool to see, but not only she was writing her own songs, but she was a female doing that. And I think that was so cool. Of course, getting into her music, I also started diving into other artists. You know, I really liked, of course, Carrie Underwood. I love Miranda Lambert. More recently, I love artists like Kacey Musgraves, Maya Morris, Hayley Witters, all those. And they each tell a story in so many of their songs, and their songwriting is just, you just kind of, I don't know, dive into it. And I just love the storytelling of country music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, it is like what you said, storytelling and making people feel inspired or to change their lives. And, you know, which leads to me to, can you share with our viewers, like, and being a 3-time cancer survivor, was it the music? Was your therapy? It healed you? And can you share?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like I say, I spent a lot of time in the hospital at a young age. I was first diagnosed with leukemia when I was 5. I relapsed when I was 9 and then again at 12. So I did have to give up, you know, sports, school, spending time with friends, which are a big part of your life when you're that age, right? So I found myself gravitating towards picking up my guitar more and bringing it into my hospital room. And that was kind of the one thing that I was up for and that stuck around for me. And, you know, a couple times I had music therapists coming in and we would, you know, strum our guitars together. And so I really found a passion for music because of that. And I think, yeah, slowly songwriting started coming into that, and that's how I got some of my feelings out and all that. So yeah
it's like, you know, the guitar's there and you learned to play at 9 years old, and then it became taking voice lessons, and and your voice is beautiful to survive. So you found each other, you know, it's like the guitar's there and it's coming to you and you're coming to it. And it's just like, it's a beautiful, beautiful way of saying, if I may, and it inspires others to follow. And, you know, so, you know, was it the first song, Survive, that you wrote? Is that correct?
Or so Survive was actually, so back in 2017.
Okay.
So it's around 2016, 2017. That was when I was granted a wish. So through the BC Children's Wish, they were called Children's Wish BC at the time. Yes. And they granted me my wish. And my wish was to record a song in a professional studio. So that's when they found a producer, and his name is Adam Alexander. And he worked in Toronto at the time, and him and his co-writer had a song called Survive. And because I wasn't sure at that time, I was just like, I'll write my own song or sing a song, just whatever. I want to go in the studio. I want to do that. So it actually worked out that he had the song Survive. And, you know, if you listen to it, it's really just what I was going through and what I felt like, and it kind of was one of those like, wow, like this is kind of meant to be. And so that was the first song that I put out, was Survive, and that was in 2017. And and then shortly after that I released my Parachute EP, and that's just a collection of songs that I continued working with that producer. And yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, you know, and congratulations again. You know, as a professional singer songwriter, like, can you tell us how much time you spend a day? Like, I mean, you like, or do you have a favorite place that you like to write songs or and play music?
I always just say my bedroom. You know, that's kind of where I grew up doing that, and it's just kind of, I guess, my safe space. And I have my piano, I have my guitar here, and so I always just kind of, I try to, if not like once a night, at least once a couple, or a couple times like a week, I like to at least sit and just kind of strum. And I'm always writing down notes in my phone, you know, something that pops up in my head. And more recently, the past couple years is when I started collaborating. You know, I think probably goes for a lot of artists. We focused on Zoom rights, you know, through the pandemic and all that. So that's what I think really switched for me was the collaboration. You know, I'd always, you know, been in my room songwriting alone. I never really branched out and collaborated much. It wasn't until I did a music performance program. So I did a little bit of collaboration there. But yeah, come when the pandemic came, kind of was like, well, what do I do now? I guess I could reach out to artists and songwrite. So that's what I did.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful. And you played at the Sunfest Country Music Festival.
Yeah.
And you're going back, right? Is that?
So that, I've played in previous years, and I actually just played last weekend. So their annual, every August long, is their festival. So I just came off. That's, this week has just been a whirlwind trying to get back to reality and all of that. But that was so fun. That was so fun.
Oh, great. You know, I understand that you've actually three country singles in the past 3 years. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my goodness. Any other highlights? Like first Nashville?
So I went to Nashville this past year in May, and I went with my friend Emily Kate, who's also a country artist, Canadian country artist. And so we went down there, and that was so fun. And it's just been, I feel like this year has been a very music focused year, and that's kind of what I want to get to. You know, I still work a part-time job, but I would love to do this full time. You know, I just live and breathe music. I want to songwrite, I want to perform. So I feel like this year has just totally just been focused on anything music, anything that's gonna, you know, kind of help or meeting people.
You will full time.
Thanks.
You will full time. And you know, like, so you know, everything you're doing is just like, it's all coming to you, right? Because of all your hard work. And who are your biggest supporters?
Oh, my parents for sure. My mom, I always say she's my momager. My dad is a huge supporter. And even I have two siblings. I have a sister and a brother, and they're right there with me. So.
Oh, that's great. And yeah. Jamie, what is next for you?
Well, what's next is I would love to get back into the studio. Like I say, I'm always writing. I always have ideas of what to do. So my plan is to get into the studio this fall and, you know, try to just record a couple tunes that I'll want to release. I want to go back to Nashville next year. There's that NSAI Songwriter Festival, so I really want to go check that out. And just lots more performances.
No, that's wonderful. And so if people want to check out your music, buy your record, like, where can they go?
Yeah, so my music is everywhere. So if that's Spotify, Apple Music, all that, they can check it out there. I actually just ordered my first line of, I have got some t-shirts made. My mom, she actually designed it all and all that. So I have to work towards, you know, putting it like online and stuff. I'm still, you know, there's a million things to learn, and I'm still very green in that sense. But hey, if you're local on the island, on Vancouver Island, you can hit me up. You can buy some merch.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Jamie, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Let's just see. If people want to listen to my music, Stomping Ground, and then check out, my music video. It'd be awesome if people check that out. I'm pretty excited about it. And I think we kind of covered everything.
I love it. And you know, I'm so, you know, happy for you. And I'd love to welcome you back.
Thank
on
you.
The show. And so I love your song. I love your Stomping
Thanks.
Ground. For those listening, watching, buy your record, buy your music.
Yes. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Anything like that helps, you know.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, and I apologize for this techno.
Oh no, gosh, it's kind of part of it, right? You know, I'm used to it, so it's totally fine, and I appreciate your patience with me hopping on.
I'm excited to have with me a very special guest, Charles Martin Smith, whose storied career as actor, writer, and director has been well chronicled worldwide. Charles has starred in iconic films such as American Graffiti, The Buddy Holly Story, and The Untouchables, to name a few. He's also made an impressive list of TV roles he's been in, such as Motive, The Beast, and he's directed and wrote movies such as Snow Walker, Stone of Destiny, and the list goes on. And I'm so excited to have him here today to talk about his recent award with the Whistler Film Festival's A Career Achievement Award, with his latest film this time, making its Canadian Festival premiere at this year's event. And welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so I know you probably get asked this, but what does this award mean to you?
Well, it's a validation, and it's very flattering, of course, but, you know, that I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm that to be remembered for, you know, a lifetime, a body of work is, I think, more flattering than being honored for one particular film or one other thing, you know, that I've been doing this all my life and I'm still here. It's pretty good. You know, I've lived in Vancouver for many, many years. So the Whistler Film Festival to me is the closest and the most precious to me. I've been there many times. I've had films there and so on, and have watched other people get lifetime career achievement awards. And for it to be my turn this time was just really gratifying.
Yeah, so congratulations. And who, if I may ask, who congratulated you? Anyone that you can share with us?
Angela Heck, who's running the festival, was the one that actually presented me with the award.
Awesome.
But it seemed like everybody came up. People from all over the Canadian film industry, which is, as I said, it's really flattering. It's nice to be remembered after having been doing this all these years.
Yes, I mean, it's like, you know, that day when you said, I won, you know, it's such an amazing, and it's a testimonial for all the work and extremely amazing work that you've done, you know, acting and writing, directing. And I mean, I understand that theater was your first choice.
It was. When I was a young acting student in Los Angeles, where I grew up in LA because my father was in the film business. He was an animator. And so he was working at the studios and I was around, and I always wanted to be like my father, but unfortunately I can't draw. I can hardly draw a stick figure. Why I did not inherit that talent of his, I don't know. But I just got very interested in acting, and I particularly loved the theater. And I thought that I would probably end up having a life either working in the theater or maybe teaching theater at the university level. And that was my main interest. But being around Los Angeles, where the film industry is so prevalent, I actually had an agent come and see me in a play that I was doing and asked to represent me. And I said, sure. And I went on a few interviews and I started getting work in film and television. And then I started studying it more. I probably studied acting for 7 or 8 years, even after I started working. I kept going to classes and trying to get to learn more.
Yeah, it's such a craft, like you know, when you're acting, and there is a difference, my understanding, in being on stage and in TV and film, correct?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's tricky to adapt one to the other. I had not acted on stage for a long time, but then when I moved to Vancouver, this would have been in the early 80s, I helped to start the Vancouver Shakespeare Festival, which still lives on in a different form called Bard on the Beach. And it was Shakespeare, which I love. And I went out there and I realized how rusty I was at it, because film acting is very different. As a film actor, you're doing your whole role in little bits and pieces. And then it's all going to be edited together later. But of course, in the theater, you go out there at 8 o'clock and it's just you and the audience for the next 2.5 hours.
Right. And every audience is different, right? So it's like, it's really amazing. And I think it's a really, if I'm like a transferable skill, you know, from theater to film, to TV. But I understand that in the film Never Cry Wolf, which was, I believe, 1983. Now, was this when you fell in love with to stay in BC?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We actually started filming in 1980. I know the movie says 83 on it because that's when it was released and when it was finished. But we began filming in 1980, and it was the first time I'd ever been to BC. And I came through Vancouver, and I remember I was staying at a hotel in the West End, and I was looking out at English Bay and Stanley Park and all the buildings. I thought, this is fantastic. I would love to live here. And it came to pass, of course, that I did exactly that. But British Columbia is just so spectacularly beautiful. And we filmed Never Cry Wolf in northern BC, all the way up into the Yukon, as far north as Dawson City. And we filmed on and off for almost 2 years. It was an enormous amount of filming that just sort of went on and on. The director, Carol Ballard, who is a genius, is primarily a documentary filmmaker. So it was almost like I was the subject of a documentary, me and the two Inuit actors that we had and all the wolves.
Yes. I mean, what an experience. So that's, you know, it is cold, but it's also, was there something else that you really, really liked about BC?
There were two things. I mean, I was so impressed by nature. And even in Vancouver, you're in the middle of nature. You're aware of it. You've got the mountains and the ocean is right there and all the parks and forests. It's really an unusual and unique city to have all of that, plus all the great things of a really good city. I got great restaurants and theaters. And then the other thing was the people. I made such good friends there. And I was just impressed by the kindness and the warmth of the people. So I just, and a couple of friends of mine, including Farley Mowat, who had written Never Cry Wolf as long, along with, you know, 100 other wonderful books. He said, Charlie, you got to come up here. Come on, you got to come up. So anyway, I had a few friends. It was the people really as much as the beauty.
That's wonderful. And thank you, Charles, for sharing. And I also want to congratulate you, if I haven't congratulated in the intro, about this time. Now, was this the first time in front of a camera for a while for acting?
For a long time. I sort of began to be more of a director and writer, particularly proud of Snowwalker, which was my next Farley Mowat story, 20 years after Never Cry Wolf. And that was one that I wrote and directed. I didn't act in it. And I got to go back up and live up in the north again, this time over in Nunavut with another wonderful Inuit actor and Barry Pepper, who's from the island. So it was another real joy doing the Snowwalker. And then I went on and directed various other things, including Dolphin Tales for Warner Brothers. And so things I hadn't acted in a long time. But when COVID hit and the industry shut down during the pandemic, I decided just to take a break myself because, and I found that I really enjoyed it. I liked taking a break. I liked getting up in the morning and not thinking, oh, I've got 4 meetings today and I've got to finish this draft. I've got to finish. I said, whoa, this is really nice. I could get used to a kind of semi-retirement. So in a way, that's kind of what I've done. But my friend, Rob Vaughn, who I've known as a producer for 25 years, and he and I have had a number of projects together. He was working on something and he asked me to come along, help him produce it, help him develop the script, and also to play one of the two leading roles. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, that's easier than directing, you know, because I don't have to worry about absolutely everything that goes on. And I looked forward to acting again, but it was a challenge. I had not played a major role in a film for at least 15 or 20 years.
But it's like a muscle memory too. Like once you start back, you know, it doesn't take long, if I may say. And but you also executive produced as well, right?
Yeah. Well, I helped him develop the project.
Yes.
On as I came on as executive producer, and then we worked on the script and casting and everything. I was involved from a producer point of view, but on set, Rob was a very good director and very good with actors. And although I was a little insecure after not having acted in a long time, he was very strong in his guidance and taking me through it. Plus, the actress who plays the lead, young actress from Toronto named Anwen O'Driscoll, she's brilliant. She's so good and so fun to work with that, you know, for an actor, it's like playing tennis. You need that good partner on the other side of the net to get the scenes really working. And Anwen and I had a great experience working together.
Yeah,
that made it so much easier.
Yeah, and for the viewers and listeners who may not know, can you tell us about the film?
It's an interesting story. It's the writer is a young queer writer in Los Angeles, and she was trying to write something that would kind of speak to her struggles as a teenager growing up and struggling with her sexuality and where she fits in the world. And in the story, Anwen plays the young teenager who she's found some letters and diaries from her estranged father who's just passed away. She hasn't seen him since the age of 3. And she wants to set off on a journey across country to learn who her father was. And I play a Vietnam veteran, broken down alcoholic hearse driver. Decent casting, I figure. And she ends up kidnapping me, sort of, or blackmailing me into driving her across the country. And we become allies in her journey. And as Rob often says, this movie is about allyship, about the fact that we can't get through life alone. We're all in this together. And what her character, both of our characters go through on this trip, I think is very moving. It's funny, it's charming, and it's very emotional.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And I would like to ask you about, I mean, I know American Graffiti, I understand it's been voted one of the 100 best movies all time.